Midday on WNYC. I'm Rebecca Carroll. I'm sure you've heard of the once incredibly popular television show Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and you probably think you already know the man at the center of it. But Morgan Neville's incredibly moving new documentary shows us a Fred Rogers behind the zip-up cardigan that has rarely been seen before. Won't You Be My Neighbor, as it's called, opens today at both the Angelica Film Center and the AMC Lowe's Lincoln Square. Morgan Neville won an Oscar and a Grammy for his previous film, 20 Feet from Stardom. And I'm super happy that you can join us. First of all, I loved 20 Feet from Stardom.
Thank you.
One of my all-time faves. And, you know, I grew up on Mr. Rogers. So Won't You Be My Neighbor, though, seems like a bit of a departure after 20 Feet from Stardom. Should we be surprised that you tackled Fred Rogers?
No. It's actually, you know, because people react that way, and I've made a lot of films about music, but I've also made films like Best of Enemies, which is about these debates that Gore Vidal and William Buckley had in the 1960s, which is very much the cousin to this film. But I feel like all the films I make essentially are about the power of culture. You know, I am a culture vulture. I love art and film and music and language and everything else I can do. So in this way, it's really about trying to understand how we can use things like television and media to better understand other people and understand ourselves, which is really what Mr. Rogers was doing with The Neighborhood.
I was going to say exactly that. He used the television as a tool. I mean, I think we romanticize the idea of it being a tool at this point because it may be too far gone.
Yeah.
But he always believed, he continued all the way through, that it was a tool that could be.
He did. I mean, he had such an interesting trajectory. And I think if he had been born 5 years sooner or later, he may never have gone into television. But he came of age right at the moment television came of age. And the first time he saw television, he said, I had to go into television because I hated it so. That
right.
He saw in that moment both the potential for what this new technology was going to do for the entire society and that there was a huge need for people like him to use it for the best of what it could be, to build community, to reach people that needed reaching.
And so before we go further into the film, like for you, how did the story come to you? Like how did, I mean, it's a perfect, he's a perfect documentary subject.
Well,
but how
but
did it
is
not
he?
Get?
I mean, the thing is, you know, it came to me, you know, when I was one and I started watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which I loved as a kid. And then I didn't think about him for 40 years. And, you know, starting maybe 8 years ago, he kept popping back into my life. And I became friends with people who knew him and they would talk about him and it would surprise me. But really, I had to wonder, did I want to make a film about him? Even though when I would listen to him talk, and in fact, you know, I've listened to a bunch of his commencement addresses and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, this is a voice I don't hear in our culture today. This grown-up, empathetic voice who's advocating for civility and kindness and kind of our better angels. But at the same time, he's the quintessential two-dimensional character.
Right.
You know, people perceive him as just kind of a milquetoast and a cardigan. And my question was, is there a real dimension there? And I didn't know that until I started digging into it. And sure enough,
you know,
it's all there.
It's so interesting, too. I've talked to a number of documentary filmmakers throughout my career, and it's always this kind of idea, will it be interesting? And then somehow it is, which I think you should get a little credit for that, you know, like because there's got to be some sense about you that you're like, I'm going to find something.
Well, there's something about doing this for a living, which is like stepping off a cliff every time and waiting for an updraft to catch you. But you've got to do that. You know, that's part of the process. And the longer you do it, and I've been doing it for a long time now, you trust that you're going to get caught in some way, that you're going to find something. But really, it's intuitive. You know, it was really watching some of his speeches late one night on YouTube and just feeling like, I need to spend more time with this voice. Right. How do I get this voice back into the cultural conversation?
And so you said, had he been born maybe 5 years later, he may not have had the same trajectory. What was he born into? And what, you know, that was one of the things that piqued my interest was that he had was born with money.
Mm-hmm.
That he, you know, was certainly a lonely child. But what was the era? What was his background?
So he graduated college in 1948. which is when he first saw television. And he was going to go directly into the seminary. You know, he grew up a rich kid in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. His parents owned a factory. He was an only child who was sickly and kind of kept under latchkey. And he had this very unique childhood that influenced how he saw the world. And when he saw television, he said, I'm not going to go to seminary. I'm going to go into television. He actually moved to New York straight from college and got a job working at NBC, like sweeping floors. And he eventually became a stage manager on shows like The Kate Smith Hour and Gabby Hayes, you know, these shows, and kind of learned how television worked. But he eventually went back and studied childhood development, and he went back to the seminary. And when he graduated from the seminary, his ordination was in television, that his ministry was assigned as television. So he might have been the first real televangelist in history. But the thing was, he never liked being famous. He never liked TV for the sake of TV. He just saw the potential of what it could do, which sets him apart from virtually every other TV star you could think of. You know, it was the least likely TV star. But to him, it was really a way of having this secular humanist ministry for children where he could explain to them how to behave. You know, how do we treat each other? How do we respect ourselves and respect other people? These basic humanist values that he pulled not only from his Christianity, but from all the world's religions. He spoke Hebrew, he studied Judaism, he studied Islam, he studied Buddhism, and he really looked for these common humanist values that all the world's religions have, which is really something we should all be reminded of every day.
You said it sets him apart from most, if all, not all, television stars. I mean, it sets him apart as a human being. I mean, I feel like he's, after watching the documentary, it's like, do I know people like this? Do people like this exist? And it's, you know, I mean, how did you stay connected to him and his reality throughout making the film?
Yeah, the question that I've gotten from virtually everybody from the moment I started working on the film is some version of, is this guy for real? You know, what, you know, nobody knows anybody like him. He was singular as a person. The show was singular in television history. But he was this very odd character with an incredible sense of mission. And I think that the way in for me was realizing that there was a part of him that was a tortured artist that would really struggled with doubt and insecurity and labored to feel like, am I doing the best I can do? Is it enough? And he felt that way as a young man. He felt that way at the very end of his life. You would think Mr. Rogers wouldn't be full of doubt at the very end of his life about, you know, how much he had done and how productive he had been. But he was, and I think that's part of what made him human. It's part of what made me understand that he was a real person. And that was great because it means that he's not a saint. You know, he would be so easy to sanctify somebody like Fred Rogers, but you realize he had to work incredibly hard to do what he did.
I'm speaking with Morgan Neville about his new documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor, about the life of Mr. Rogers. Why do you think children were so important to him and that he honed in on kids?
Really, I think at its essence, he thought of the world divided between two poles. And I, on the one hand, love, which he talked about all the time. And on the other hand, fear. And to him, fear left untreated becomes hatred and anger and resentment. But underneath all those things is fear. And children are fearful. They're trying to figure out how the world works. And what he did again and again and again on his show was try to help quell children's fears, try to teach them how to process bad things. Unlike every other kid's show in the history of television, which is about joy and fun and everything else, he was doing shows for 2 to 6 year olds about death and war and divorce, you know, which is incredible. But part of it is him leveling with children and saying, I'm not going to pretend bad things don't happen. I'm going to explain them to you in an age-appropriate way so you can make sense of them and process them and not bottle up those fears, and then they'll come out in other very unhealthy ways as you grow up.
So he had that kind of laser focus on kids, but he also had a constellation of people in his own life. He had his wife and his 2 sons and his puppets and his, you know, and his co-workers and whatnot. What was your sense of his widow's How did she feel about you making the film?
Well, it's interesting. She was fantastic, you know, and she is fantastic. Joanne Rogers, she's 92 now. And a few years ago, when I flew to Pittsburgh to meet with her for the first time and make my pitch to do this, I said, I want to do this film and you're going to have to trust me and you can't have any control over it. But this is what I want to do. I want to do a film that's not about the biography of Fred Rogers. I want to do a film about the ideas of Fred Rogers. And she smiled and she said, I love that idea. Fred himself had always said if anybody had done a biography of his life, it would be the most boring film of all time. So I don't agree, but I take her point, you know, that ideas were the things that motivated him. And those were the things where you really find the tension points between him and the culture. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, radicalism, you know, and him being radical in a way. And, you know, radical really means root. You know, radical change is a root change. And in a way, I feel like Fred was rooted in these basic human values and that the world and culture around him moved away from those things. So he appears radical, but essentially he's bringing us back to the root. You know, that's what I think is radical about him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in watching, certainly there's a nostalgic feel if you're of a certain age, you know, and you sure. go back into that world. But then there's also that kind of sense of the world changing and him sort of staying clear on his path of what matters. How do you think he would be received today?
Well, there's certainly a hunger for his message. I've seen it with his film, but you see it just in the culture. I mean, there's a certain amount of virality to Mr. Rogers. There's a bit of a Mr. Rogers renaissance going on right now, and I think it's because people are hungering for this kind of message of kindness and civility, and not in like a Pollyanna-ish way, but in a, like, how do we actually nurture our communities and our societies and our neighborhoods? But would he fit into the television landscape? I don't know. You know, I don't think he felt like he felt that he fit into television by the 1980s. I think he felt out of step.
There's that moment when he is brought in to talk with folks post 9/11, and he says, "I just don't know if it's going to help." Do you think he kind of went back and forth between feeling that he was really making a difference and feeling like he wasn't making a difference at all?
I don't think he ever felt satisfied that he was making enough of a difference. He even kind of denied that he had the soapbox he did. People would say, "You're a huge advocate. You have a huge soapbox. You can change lots of minds." And I don't think he ever felt comfortable in that role. I think he understood the power of it, but I don't think he thought of himself as that important. And I think that was something that kept him moving, you know, and kept him humble and kept him working to do what he wanted to do. You know, the PSAs he did in the wake of 9/11 are powerful and human, but you can see him struggling to try and make sense of his worldview with a world that's increasingly out of touch with his values.
Going back a bit to when he testified before Senator John mm-hmm. Pastore of Rhode Island in 1969, who was slashing $20 million from the PBS budget. That is just a phenomenal piece of film, and so real. What was that like to discover it, to incorporate it, and did it blow you away a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the perfect Mr. Rogers goes to Washington moment. It's right. The kind of thing that seems scripted, even though it wasn't. And it was him arguing for public broadcasting in the first year of public broadcasting. PBS started in 1968. He was one of the first faces of PBS, but at that time, he wasn't even well known at all, certainly not by the Senator Pastore or other people at that time. But what you see is his ability to use his superpower, which is this penetrating emotional honesty on these hard-bitten senators. And it's amazing he had this ability to bring people to him, to speak at his own level and never get off his own game. And other people inevitably had to come to him on those terms. I saw it again and again when he would speak to people, cynics or hard-bitten TV show hosts, Tom Snyder, Joan Rivers, all these people who just melt around him because he's so sincere and vulnerable and emotional that there's no way you can fight that. You just have to succumb to it.
Especially that scene with Tom Joyner and Daniel Striped Tiger,
yeah,
right?
I mean,
they're just as it's. If you're a hip person, or you think you're a hip person, you're suddenly like, that's kind of amazing.
It is amazing, and I think it was part of the experience of working on the film. But I think it's an experience of watching the film is. Eventually, Mr. Rogers is going to find your emotional bullseye, and you can't hide from it. You just have to give up and give into it. And when you do it, it feels really good.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking with Morgan Neville on his new documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor, about the life of Mr. Rogers. Tonight at 7, Morgan Neville will be at the opening of Won't You Be My Neighbor at the Angelica Film Center, and at 8:15 at the AMC Lowe's Lincoln Square. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.